There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
You're listening to the third and final hour of The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. Beautiful sunset down here at Barasti. Well, not just at Barasti, it's sort of everywhere in Dubai, probably across the whole of the country, actually.
Yeah,
or is it just laid on for Barasti? Is it part and parcel of the brunch down here on a Saturday?
Yeah, just pop along to Instagram shortly, because each and every, well, an awful lot of people in Dubai will be posting
sunset pictures. All of us have become very artistic on our posts all of a sudden, haven't we, eh? Beautiful evening. Anyways, a beautiful evening for sports fans as well. Let's get some Premier League reaction. We reckon we might have seen the last of Marko Arnautović in a West Ham jersey, conspiracy theorists alike.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as we touched on there, that the more we've watched it and the TV footage here have replayed that moment about three or four times, where he pauses in the middle of the London Stadium, an uproarious response from the crowd as he was being hooked off for Andy Carroll, and it was a real wave. It was both hands up to the sky, a tap of the badge on the chest, and sitting down, a little bit of an embrace with the manager on the touchline. So I don't think there appeared to be much ill will for this, but it would certainly appear that that may well be the last time. And to be honest, he hasn't had much of an impact on the game. So if his head has been turned, perhaps that's best for them.
Be a shame. Would be a shame. Not just for West Ham, I think for the Premier League as well, because he's been covered by another couple of clubs. He's had a good time in the top division over in the United Kingdom. So we will get the thoughts of our commentator in just a few moments on that. A West Ham fan in his own right, Adam Bridge, will bring us up to date with that. In the meantime, though, Mark Archer is here. He can tell us what's been happening in the cricket. Are they still playing down in South Africa?
They are still playing, and Pakistan have picked up a couple of the South African wickets. They're now 64 for 4 in their second innings. Their lead over Pakistan is 141 runs with 6 wickets remaining. Batting currently for the Proteas is Hashim Amla, 24 not out, and Temba Bamvula on 4 not out, the new batsman. Last man to fall was Hamza LBW to Fahim Ashraf, 4 without scoring. So South Africa 64 for 4 in their second innings. That Pakistan were dismissed earlier today for 185. So the lead for South Africa is 141 runs, 6 wickets remaining. Plenty of time left in this game. I can see a result coming, Tom, from Johannesburg.
Keep an eye on that one. We'll keep an eye on the rugby. We'll get back to the rugby in a moment. Let's just go back to football local, or closer to home, where we've got Asian Cup action for you. Vietnam were beaten earlier on by Iran, but now we've got news of Yemen against Iraq. It's still on.
It certainly still is. 38 minutes gone on this one, and Group D of the 2019 AFC Asian Cup, I can tell you, it's Yemen 0, Iraq 2. So Iran, managed by the former Real Madrid boss, former Manchester United assistant Carlos Queiroz. Iraq doing great as well. They will be the two teams to emerge from Group D. Let us not forget as well, Yorvan Vieira was the man that actually took Iraq to Asian Cup success back in 2007. But 38 minutes on the clock there. It is Yemen 0, Iraq 2.
Let's go over to the rugby, get you an update on what's happening in the rugby. Feel free, Mark Archer, to tell us what is the latest there.
Yeah, we have European Champions Cup rugby taking place in Europe this weekend. Tom, I can tell you a couple of scores here. A couple of half-time scores have come in the Champions Cup. Just kicked off in the second half, Leinster at home in Dublin taking on the French powerhouse Toulouse. They lead 10 points to 6. And Montpellier over in France taking on Newcastle Falcons. They have lead their 17 points to 3. The later kickoffs today, Bath are at home to Wasps. All-English match-up that one. Ulster will take on Racing 92. Scarlets entertain Leicester Tigers. And in the late kickoff, Toulon in the south of France are taking on Edinburgh.
A live coverage of Chelsea against Newcastle United a little later on for you from 9:30 local time here in the UAE, when the sun has truly set here in Dubai. In the meantime, though, you've got goals from 7 o'clock. Goals from Leicester City against Southampton, Palace against Watford, Cardiff entertaining Huddersfield Town, Burnley are at home to Fulham, and our feature match from 7, courtesy of TalkSport, Chris McCarty, will be Brighton Hove Albion against Liverpool.
Indeed it will be, yes. Liverpool looking to bounce back after that first defeat of the campaign from a league perspective, that is, to Manchester City last time out. Delighted to say we can now cross live to the UK, because joining us on the line from TalkSport International, it is John Anderson. And I will say a happy new year first and foremost, and a very good afternoon to he now. A very good afternoon to you, John.
Thank you very much, and a happy new year to you and all your listeners as well.
Yeah, let us start, if we can, not by looking ahead to our featured game, but I want to talk a little, if we can, about this early kickoff in the Premier League, West Ham United against Arsenal. We've spoken at length today about Marko Arnautović and the fact that he is seemingly hankering for a move to China. TalkSport, I believe it was, who kind of broke that news story this past week, speaking to his brother and agent. What is your understanding, as things stand, of the situation regarding Marko Arnautović, John?
Well, we do know that he has expressed an interest via his brother and agent in joining the Chinese club. I mean, it's a huge incentive, and I think West Ham have to weigh it up in terms of whether they feel that Arnautović is such a key figure that they would be reluctant to let him go, or whether they decide to cash in, and it is a significant fee, given that a player is, I think he's almost 30 years old. He is a fan's favourite, so it wouldn't be a very popular decision. It does have strange kind of resonance with the situation you'll remember a couple of years ago with Dimitri Payet, where the same situation occurred for West Ham. Payet was vilified, really, by their supporters when he decided to quit the club, saying he virtually decided to go on strike. I don't think things are quite as bad with Arnautović, but obviously that is a situation which we will look at with interest. But, you know, it seems to me that certainly the carrot has been dangled in front of him. The question is whether he decides that the Chinese league is a good place. I mean, you can earn a lot of money in China, but equally your profile globally, with the greatest respect to their league, will plummet, because in the Premier League, you've got the eyes of the world on you. That is not the case with the Chinese Premier League at all. So Marko Arnautović, I think, faces a dilemma, really. Does he go for the money, or does he stay and continue to play for a much higher profile situation?
Yeah, 83 minutes on the clock in that early kickoff. It is West Ham United taking on Arsenal. It is West Ham 1, Arsenal 0. Let's look ahead to our featured match at 7 o'clock. It is Brighton against Liverpool. John, Liverpool interested to see how they bounce back after that opening league defeat of the campaign to Manchester City. How do you see this? Is this a game where you expect Liverpool to do just that and come back with the 3 points?
I think so. Obviously, January has not been a good month for Liverpool. Funnily enough, it isn't generally, bizarrely. I think they've only won 8 of the 26 January fixtures that Jurgen Klopp has taken charge of. I'm not quite sure what the reason for that is. But, of course, they lost to Manchester City. It was followed by an FA Cup defeat at Wolves, where they were very poor, Liverpool, and didn't deserve to get anything out of that at all. But I think, you know, there is an enormous incentive here. They're still 4 points clear at the top of the table. It's not all doom and gloom when you think the one game they've lost is Manchester City away, probably the hardest game of the entire season. So I think it'd be wrong to say that Liverpool have collapsed or that the wheels have come off, but I think Jurgen Klopp will be aware that he needs to get something out of this game. Traditionally, they have a very, very good record at Brighton. They've never lost a top flight game at Brighton ever, Liverpool. But Brighton are very, very good at home. They're on a four-match unbeaten run. They had a terrific win down the south coast at Bournemouth in the FA Cup. And they've just got the one change to their team, which is Gaëtan Bong, an experienced left-back, coming in for Bernardo. So they've got a settled team. They've got Glenn Murray, a player who's capable of scoring goals. I don't think this will be an easy game for Liverpool at all. But I think it's one where Jurgen Klopp will sense that if he can put 7 points distance between himself and Manchester City, who play on Monday, of course, then that would be a significant bounce back and a significant boost.
We'll get team news in just a second from you, John. A quick word, if we can, about Liverpool's opposition today, Brighton and Hove Albion. Chris Hughton, what a job he has done. I've said it time and time again, I don't think that man gets the credit he deserves. Give us a little appraisal of their season thus far and how much you've been impressed with the job that Hughton has done down there.
Well, he's done a fantastic job. I mean, you know, when you look at the table, they're relatively comfortably placed. They're 10 points above the drop zone, which you'd think would be enough to get, not guarantee, but to make it surprising if they were to embroiled in the relegation battle. They need to improve their away form, Brighton, which has been poor. But on the other hand, their home form is absolutely outstanding. And Hughton has done a brilliant job. It's their third season in the Premier League. As I said, it looks as if they're going to remain there next season. What he does need to improve, Chris Hughton, is his record against Liverpool. Would you believe he's faced them 6 times as a manager? He's lost every single game. Not only that, he's conceded 25 goals in the process, so he probably won't be relishing the prospect of facing Salah, Firmino and Mane this afternoon, but he's going to have to deal with them. But on their day, Brighton are a very good team. They've beaten Manchester United, of course, at home this season. They're no mugs at the Amex, and they're on a high at the moment, so I think Hughton will be telling his players, yes, Liverpool probably pound for pound are a better team than us, but they've lost their last two games. We've not lost in our last four, so let's go at them.
And how positive has Hughton been with his team lineup, John? Give us the starting 11 of both Brighton and Albion.
It's basically pretty much an unchanged lineup, but for one enforced change. The left back, Bernardo, pulled a hamstring in the cup game against Bournemouth. He's out. So the hugely experienced Cameroon international Gaëtan Bon comes in. I mean, this is his 16th game of the season. So, they pretty much have a settled team. They play with sort of five across midfield and Glenn Murray up front. Jurgen Lacadia, who came from PSV Eindhoven, didn't do an awful lot last season, seems to have improved. He's got two goals in his last four games. As for Liverpool, well, they've got problems at the back, as we know. Joe Gomez is still injured. Joel Matip is back on the bench today, but there's no Dejan Lovren, which means that Fabinho, who is, of course, a defensive midfielder, will again play in the back four as a makeshift centre-half alongside the returning Virgil van Dijk. James Milner is not in the team today. Serdan Shaqiri starts for Liverpool. So it's a very strong Liverpool team, but they do have a centre-half, Fabinho, who's not really accustomed to that position, which may give the likes of Lacadia and Glenn Murray an opportunity to get at him.
Brighton and Hove Albion taking on Liverpool. It is our featured match here in Dubai, 103.8, kick-off from 7 p.m. Last one before I let you go, John. There is a mouth-watering prospect, a huge match for tomorrow at Wembley. It is Tottenham Hotspur against Manchester United. United were over here this past week in training. I caught up with a few of the lads and they were enjoying themselves over here. Tottenham, they had a tough Carabao Cup semi-final against Chelsea. John, Mauricio Pochettino, his future is being discussed, heavily linked, of course, with Manchester United. Just how big a game is this for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Obviously, he's won five of his opening five matches, but from a tactical standpoint, this is his biggest test, is it not?
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, it's an intriguing contest, as you've outlined. It's got everything, hasn't it? It's got a Spurs manager who's been linked with Manchester United. It's got a caretaker Manchester United manager who's been linked with a permanent job at Manchester United. It's got United on the back of five straight wins. And Tottenham Hotspur, of course, still pushing. I mean, everybody's talking about a two-horse race for the title. Spurs, you can't rule them out just yet. As you say, they had that victory over Chelsea in the Carabao Cup. So United, as they've been in the sunshine, enjoying a training session. So they'll probably be slightly better rested before this match than the Tottenham Hotspur players will. But it should be an absolutely terrific game. It's a massive game for Solskjaer because, as you say, with the greatest respect to the five teams that they've beaten, they haven't been of the highest quality. Reading, of course, in the FA Cup last weekend, struggling around the bottom of the Championship at the moment. But I think if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer really does have genuine ambitions of being taken seriously as a full-time Manchester United manager, if he can go to Wembley and beat Tottenham Hotspur, that would probably have people sitting up and taking notice. I mean, it seems to me that the players are playing with a smile on their faces. Pogba seems happier. Rashford started scoring goals more frequently, and they just look a more relaxed, buoyant squad. As you said, you were around them in midweek. We were looking at pictures and footage of the training sessions and the players on Twitter, and they just seem to be all smiles. Marcus Rashford was tweeting and Instagramming photographs of himself with some of the younger players involved at Manchester United. It just looks like Solskjaer's been a breath of fresh air. If I was a Tottenham fan, I'd be slightly concerned. It's probably not the best time to meet Manchester United. As you say, whoever you beat, wins breed confidence, wins breed success. So United will be confident that they can do a job at Wembley, and Pochettino's job is to stop them.
John Anderson, always a pleasure, my man. Happy New Year to you. Looking forward
pleasure,
to your commentary
you. This
afternoon. It is Brighton against Liverpool. It is our featured match. For now, though, John, thank you very much. We'll look forward to that from 7 p.m. over here in Dubai.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, yo, yo.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
West Ham up to eighth, and I've got those bleeds. So can you take over, Matt Fortune? Hang on, just got to sort this out.
Oh, Tom. Why do I always come on when Arsenal are rubbish? Well, as you say, Tom is, he's actually not gone anywhere apart from dancing around this top deck. West Ham have beaten Arsenal 1-0. That goal from Declan Rice just after half-time, enough to separate the sides. And in truth, it's thoroughly, thoroughly deserved. Arsenal did in the 93rd minute, 45 seconds from the end, have the ball in the back of the net, but Laurent Koscielny's goal was ruled out for offside, and rightly so. And to be honest, I don't remember seeing a time where Lucas Fabianski had to make a save. Arsenal went close a couple of times, they went wide, but ultimately this is all about West Ham. They had the best player on the pitch for an hour, Sami Nasri, making his first Premier League start. He, if he continues this form, is going to knit that side together absolutely brilliantly. He adds a little bit of something to them. The link between midfield and up top, we'll come on to who is going to be up top for West Ham, because the second big story out of today, apart from the 3 points for West Ham, is what happens to their star striker Marko Arnautović. Arnautović was substituted after about 70 minutes, and tellingly, after a week in which he was linked with a move to China, openly admitted through his agent that he was probably interested in that move, he was hooked, waved to the crowd for what was an extraordinary amount of time for a man who might not be leaving, and all the talk at the moment will be that was his last game for the Hammers. But as it is, it finishes West Ham 1, Arsenal 0. Arnautović didn't have much impact, so maybe there will be light at the end of that tunnel.
We'll keep an eye on that story for you if anything else comes in the post-match analysis and press conferences, we'll let you know. But I'm just conscious of the fact that we sort of gleaned over the Andy Murray story a little bit. We didn't have a huge amount of time leading into it before we got back onto the football, so I want to go back to that. Just to set the scene, I mean, for those that don't know, Andy Murray, very emotional in a pre-Australian Open press conference. It was a bit of a sort of nothing press conference as well. It was a bit of a nothing question that prompted the tears as well, which shows the weight on his shoulders as he opened up about the injury that he's been battling. He's basically said, look, his time is up. He'd love to get through to Wimbledon. I think all of us around this table are in agreement that it's going to be a miracle if he does get through to Wimbledon, which does beg the question, should he not therefore, I mean, is he right, Mark Archer, to be playing in this Aussie Open, giving it a go?
I wouldn't be surprised after the press conference if he actually doesn't take place in the field. It sounds as though he's really struggling with the injury. Why even start the tournament if he's struggling with his body now? I think he may be done and dusted. It's a massive shame. I remember seeing him physically at the Mabuddala tennis event last year. I think he either pulled out of the event or played a one set match with Serena Williams. I can't remember the exact what he did, but I saw him and we were told sort of behind the scenes he looked terribly physically. He could barely walk. I saw him walk to
just had a hip replacement.
Yeah, but why is he playing tennis? I mean, you can't be playing, but I do feel sorry for him that his body's basically given up on him and he can't perform. 31 years old, probably a year or two past his prime. But when you look at the, as Chris said earlier, the era, and it shows you how amazing Roger Federer is at 38, and also highlights the comeback and bounce of Rafa Nadal, who's been through some pretty chronic injuries himself with knees and elbows and wrists, how Rafa's stayed relevant in tennis and has been as good as he has ever been, and Novak Djokovic, who's gone through all sorts of problems in the last couple of years as well. Then you have Andy Murray, who was kind of the fourth guy of that quartet, really, in terms of winning stuff and being performances, but on his day, at his very best, was a match for all those players, and he beat them all at different surfaces at different times in his career. And it's just that you do feel sorry for the guy, that tennis has been his life. Like all these guys, from a pretty young age, he was 13, 14, 12. I think he had to move to Spain or France.
Yeah, he moved to Spain over to Barcelona.
Because he couldn't get the coaching. They didn't have the facilities in either Scotland or England. And he moved to somewhere and grew up on the clay court surfaces and played a lot against Rafa Nadal, I think, at a very young age. So it's been a long career for these guys from being 12, 13 years old. So you do feel sorry for him. I think obviously he's coming out now and saying his body's done. I think he's done and dusted. And what we heard a year ago, which doesn't surprise me, is we were hearing behind the scenes that this injury is chronic. It couldn't be fixed. It's arthritic of nature. His body is now worn and torn away. Nothing can fix it. It's basically surgery is an attempt to repair something that's broken, and it's not going to do so. So you feel sorry for an athlete that he's not being able to go out on his own terms. You feel for that. But he has had an amazing career. He's won more than any British tennis players won, in our lifetimes, and likely to do so for a long time. And he's been a pretty good credit to the game. He's conducted himself pretty well, I think, generally as well as a person. And so you do feel sorry for the guy.
Matt Fortune, I mean, you've been to
You've been to a couple of press conferences in your time. We've seen some dramatic press conferences as well in our time as well. I mean, how did you read it as well? Because it was almost like he was sort of caught unawares, wasn't it? I mean, these are things that these players contractually have to do, and yet something triggered.
Yeah, there's two elements to it. Part of me thinks, was it planned? I'm not suggesting for a second that the emotion was planned, but was the reveal possibly planned? I think because it was a mundane line of questioning. How are you feeling, Andy? And it was almost like he was prepared to tell people that there was a problem, and that then got the better of him emotionally. And I think, sort of touching on the emotional side of things, I think Andy Murray, and I'm sure we'll debate it in terms of how well he is received or otherwise in the UK media and certainly by his own fans, his humanising of being able to cry and be emotional and be utterly devastated but also really happy with what he's achieved, I think has done him so many favours in the public persona. You remember him crying on stage, losing his second US Open final to Roger Federer. And again today, this week, with the press conference, I think that really... he's very open about his feelings, and I think he just got the better of him and he didn't try and fight it back. And I think when you have someone like that that is so comfortable within themselves emotionally, and from a young man's perspective, and men find it very difficult to talk about their emotions, having someone so engaged with that I think is really, really positive. And I ultimately think that was what it was. When you're ready to go and you feel that you are really upset about something, because he would have known this is coming for a while, and all it needs is that tiny little trigger, and not having to keep it in and just letting out, I think was really good to see.
Chris McCullough, just on the back of the conversation we kicked off this show about a couple of hours ago about sort of money in sport, and we've seen that develop in the time we've been on, where the Marko Arnautović saga continued. Looks like he's paid his last game for West Ham. That means he's accepted a huge bid to go over to China to fill his and obviously his agent's pockets as well. Let's contrast that with someone like an Andy Murray, who is not short of a few quid. He's set up for life through what he's achieved and also what he's earned during the game. But maybe to put that into context, therefore, the emotions coursing through his veins there, when the reality dawns, the knock on the door that you're going to get up in the next couple of months and you're not going to... Yeah. You have to hit a tennis ball.
Absolutely.
And I think, life without tennis.
Yeah, and that's it. Despite the fact for a number of these athletes, despite the fact they are paid huge sums of money, it's the love of it. Exactly why Roger Federer continues to get himself up every morning, continues to put himself through hell during his off season to get him fit at the age of 37. He'll be 38 in August. And for Andy Murray, and like most sportsmen and women, you speak to them and, you know, what's the best piece of advice you ever have been given? And more often than not, they'll tell you that give it your all till the bitter end. You know, don't give up too soon, because when you do give it up, you'll miss it. And I think to go to what Matt pointed out, and I think it's absolutely spot on, I think the fact that's really hurting Andy is that he's not going out on his own terms. He's 31 years of age, arguably 3-4 years left in the tank there. He's in love with the sport. It's all that he knows. It's all that his life has been built around, is the sport of tennis. And for that to be ripped away from him, and he said so in his, and I think in an interview he gave after the press conference, everything else is fine. His knees, his ankles, his wrists, his shoulders, everything else. His sense of humour is there as well. Everything is there. It's just this one hip, this hip injury that, despite the fact that he's followed all of the advice that the surgeons, the rehabilitation team have given him, it's not cleared up. He is in pain. You know, he was beaten in a practice match, 6-1, 4-1 before he and Novak Djokovic decided to end it there. He's in an awful lot of pain. You could see him gingerly, you know, walking around the court. And bless him, he has pushed his body to the very edge to try and get back. It's not, unfortunately, enough. And whether this be the last, or he can eke out some other tournaments between now and Wimbledon, if it is to be the last, it's a sad ending to what has been a quite remarkable career in what is, and I'm reiterating, the greatest era of tennis that we have ever seen. Since
I wonder if there's an element of regret as well, you know, because if we were having this conversation not even 10 years, 5, 6, 7 years ago or something like that, and we'd be looking at 31 and we're going, oh, see, he's had a good innings in the game. He's played a good knock. He's gone well. And then in that, last 7 years or so, we've seen the continuation of the career.
You're right.
And he's probably looking at going,
hang on, I've got another 7 years in the tank.
That's a great point, an absolute great point. There wasn't so long ago we talked at 31, 32, that being it for a tennis player. But the Rodgers, the Rafas now, and even Rafa, he's now 32, teetering on that. It's mainly Roger, because what Roger has done and shown the rest of the field is, wait a minute, you can manage your year. You know, Roger missed 6 months, for goodness sake, through injury, comes back in his first tournament, he wins the Australian Open. So
look to the Williams as well and see what they...
There's a great example as well, Tom, and you're absolutely right. I think in Andy, and I'm sure in the coming months there will be an awful lot of journalists hankering to sit down with him and get the first exclusive. That is what he will... That you'll start to tease that out, that in actual fact, yeah, if I'd been told 10 years ago you'll finish up at 31 having won 3 Grand Slams, 2 gold medals, won the Davis Cup as well, you would have said you'd bitten your hand off for it. It's the fact though that Roger has shown, and the Williams sisters, has shown a different way to prolong your career, and Andy, and therefore at the age of 31, is being cut down in his prime.
You're absolutely right, Chris, and just to add to that, and I found this fascinating when I read earlier, he's had the same number of years at the top of his career as someone like Pete Sampras. A 14-year career is actually, as you say, a pretty good haul back then. Boris Becker had 15, Mats Wilander had 15, but he's had one more than the likes of Stefan Edberg. That is the sort of career that you have when you're putting your body on the line. And you'll find, and I think Arch touched on it earlier, what has probably drove Murray at a time when the elderly player, the older player, should I say, someone like Roger Federer, is that Murray has had to put every single ounce of everything he has. He didn't have the phenomenal technique that Federer was blessed with. He didn't have the power of Nadal. He didn't have anything in essence. He's a sort of a lanky, awkward kid from Scotland, but has had to create this athletic frame based on a pure passion of sport, of competition. And it could be argued that it's chasing the guys above him that are more naturally gifted at this sport that has actually brought it back a little bit early. And it's a real shame. I mean, he's such a he's an awesome guy. And it's heartbreaking listening to that sort of press conference, because he sort of put it on himself by wanting to be as good as he possibly can be.
Before we start feeling terribly sorry for Mr. Murray and his bank balance, let me just tell you, let me just run through some numbers that I've just done some research on. They say he'll finish his career, if he does finish it soon, with $165 million in career earnings, US dollars. That's $60 million of prize money that he's made on tour. And they estimate around $100 million in earnings from endorsements, bonuses, appearance fees, from a proper sort of tracking thing here. So he's done pretty well for a 31-year-old. He's gonna retire with $165 million in the bank. And he's Scottish, so I'm sure he's not spent a penny of that in his time. That'll be his bank balance. He probably did.
He's absolutely spot on.
But the only thing I'd say, though, the only thing I would say to that is in the context of the conversation we're having there, which is, yeah, great, looks great on paper. But I wonder how much of that he would give for the chance of another 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think, interestingly, we talk about his passion for tennis. I was just having a think. Is it tennis or is it competition? Because I think those are two different things. And then drawing on the fact that he's sitting on a fair wedge of cash, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the sort of guy that ends up doing something really, really good with that money, as in to grow it, goes into something that, again, he can feel passionate about, something that creates an element of competition. I have no idea what that was. If I did, I would be wealthier than I currently am now. But it's that sort of thirst for wanting to be the best, or at least move in those circles, that when you have the luxury of sitting on a great deal of money, that you can pursue anything. And of course it's not going to be sports focused because of the unfortunate injuries, but I think there's a lot of longevity in the career of Andy Murray, and I certainly don't think it's going to be in the pundit's chair. I think he's got too much about him, too much desire to be very, 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 very good at something, that we'll see him go into something else a little bit more interesting.
Judy will help him. She always has good advice, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. I think he will go into coaching. As I said earlier, I mean, Andy Roddick said it, in terms of one of the best tacticians the game has seen, you know, not only maximising his strengths, but hiding his weaknesses as well, Andy Murray. You know, he has, and you're absolutely right, Matt, in order to chase down the greatest three that we've ever seen, Andy Murray has put his kind of next few years in jeopardy with a hip injury. You know, he's put it all on the line, but I do see a life in coaching potentially. I think he will inevitably be a brilliant analyst, because he's quite droll, but he's got that tennis, you know, analytical eye. And I am well aware that he is working on a number of charitable things up in Dunblane, which of course is a town in Scotland steeped in tragedy. And of course Andy was part of that well documented mass shooting all those years back when I was a small boy back in Scotland. So there are a number of things around for Andy Murray. But that is no consolation for Andy, because right now all he wants to do is be a tennis player.
And there's, I mean, Andy or Hugo or any of the team, if you're listening, I mean, there's always a place at the grill table for you as well. You know, if things really, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you had to get scheduled on and things like that, but
you can't go off and play golf like me.
No, but no. You know,
you've got to show up.
If you're waiting in the wings, there's always an opportunity that someone might drop out last minute. You never know.
And I should also point out that the rota is done until the end of March as well, Andy. So just let me know if you are available from April onwards. Spent too long on that rota that I've not sent out.
Don't do that again. Come hella high water. Andy Murray or no Andy Murray, forget it. Right, we are. You're listening to The Grill. We are going to give you some team news ahead of the 7 o'clock kickoffs. Before we do that, though, as if you need it, and I feel a bit weird about doing this. You know, he's not officially retired. He's just got very emotional about what he's doing at the moment. He's obviously not in a great place physically and emotionally. We will watch on with interest whether he competes at the Australia Open and to what extent as well. I suppose the other question we haven't mentioned, and dare we mention it as well, he has confirmed for Dubai. Let's wait and see, shall
we? Yeah, that was confirmed last week that he is here for Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championship. But
let's wait and see. Yeah. Let's remain the optimist, ever the optimist. Should it be the last time that we see Andy Murray on competitive course, I think it's only right that we just remind ourselves of some of his extraordinary achievements and highlights during his career.
Andy, does that mean that this might be your last tournament?
I've said to myself, it's my goal, I want to win a Grand Slam. There's a lot of expectation, but it's something that, you know, that I have to try and block out.
It means a lot to the players, you know, when you're representing your country, it always does, and it's definitely up with the Grand Slams because of the top players are competing now.
History is made at the US Open. Andy Murray, the first British male winner of a Grand Slam for 76 years.
It's great to have finally done it, and you know, there's a sense of how big a moment that is in British tennis.
The waiting is over. Most spectacular style, Andy Murray.
You're the first person ever to win two Olympic tennis gold medals. That's an extraordinary feat, isn't it?
To defend the singles title, I think Venus and Serena have won about four each. But
Andy, Sam is the first U.S. player to reach a major semi-final since 2009. How would you describe
male player?
I beg your pardon?
Male player, right?
Yes, yeah. First male player.
So he's I can't believe I'm missing this match. What's the score? It's like 4-2 or something. What's the score? Should we just go and...
I said to my team, look, I think I can kind of get through this until Wimbledon. That is where I'd like to stop playing. But I'm also not certain I'm able to do that.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Dubai Eye 103.8. Let us build up to our 7 o'clock kickoffs. Not, though, before we put you in the picture of other sports. When you talk other sports, you talk other people, like Mark Archer. Archie, what's the latest from the rugby, please, fella?
European Champions Cup rugby this afternoon, Tom. There are six matches taking place. Early kickoff is in Dublin, where Leinster, into the second half, lead Toulouse 22-6. And over in the south of France, Montpellier to be exact, they leave Newcastle Falcons 45-3. Kicking off later this afternoon, Bath will entertain Wasps in the All-English Derby. Ulster will take on Racing 92. Scarlets host Leicester Tigers. And Toulon are at home to Edinburgh.
Big day for football fans, big day for rugby fans, big day for cricket fans as well, especially if you are South African, because we've got that fascinating series, South Africa against Pakistan, ongoing at the moment. A few wickets have fallen in this one.
Yeah, the Pakistan team are fighting back. They were dismissed early today for 185 in their first innings. That gave a pretty good lead to the South Africans, but into their second innings, South Africa 81-4. At the crease, Hashim Amla on 33, Temba Bavuma on 12. So South Africa lead Pakistan by 158 runs. Six wickets remaining. Plenty of time left in this match. We're only in the third session on day two. So a result is imminent if the weather behaves itself. But South Africa still in the box position there. 158 run lead. Six wickets remaining. can Pakistan find some late wickets to get right back into the match?
Iraq still leading Yemen, 55 minutes gone in the Asian Cup, second game of three today. And Lazio absolutely battering their opposition, Navarra, at the moment. 42 minutes on the clock, still the first half, and Lazio lead by 3-0. That's the first of three games. Juventus in action, 11:45, away to Bologna. There's also games being played in other corners of Europe. We'll get into that a little later on. But let's get back to the Premier League if we can, because we've got Brighton against Liverpool for you live here on Dubai i103.8 from 7 o'clock. And goals from all the other fixtures. So Burnley taking on Fulham. Matt Fortune, how are Burnley looking?
Yeah, Burnley coming into this game on a good run of form. There was a little bit of a worry about Burnley earlier on in the season, but they've got two league wins on the bounce, looking for their third. The big-ish news is that Joe Hart stays on the bench, dropped three game weeks ago. Is it any surprise that Burnley have gone on a run ever since that happened? So Tom Heaton maintains his place in goal. Sean Dyche makes seven changes from the side who put their place in the fourth round of the FA Cup last weekend. Only James Tarkowski, Charlie Taylor, Jeff Hendrick and Dwight McNeil retain their place.
What about the visitors, Fulham? How do they look?
Yeah, Claudio Ranieri looking for another victory as he looks to pull Fulham out of the relegation mire. They've gone in with a 3-4-3, as has been pretty much the way Ranieri's gone in recent weeks. Sergio Rico in goals. It's a back three: Dennis Adoy, Tim Ream and Maxime Le Marchand, the summer signing from France. Midfield four: Cyrus Christie will be the right wing back. Joe Bryan in from Bristol City in the summer, left wing back. Michel Seri, Callum Chambers, the two midfielders. Then the front three of Andre Schürrle, Alexander Mitrovic, the big number nine leading the line, and then the young exciting English talent Ryan Sessegnon will be on that left hand side. Burnley, Fulham, that is your team news.
Cardiff entertaining Huddersfield. Let's start with the Welsh team. How do they look for June?
Yeah, so they've gone with three changes from their last league game. Cardiff just above the relegation zone. A big game for them. Joe Bennett has come in for Greg Cunningham in defence. And then the very exciting, actually, I was very impressed when I saw him recently, Nathaniel Mendes-Lang and Junior Hoyler also come in either side of a four-man of Callum Patterson. So it's a 4-1-4-1 for the Cardiff Blues.
As to their opponents this afternoon, let's find out more about Huddersfield Town.
And there's a few Huddersfield fans in. There aren't many, but there are three in. Huddersfield Town, we all know, are destined for Championship football next season. And, they have gone in with a 4-2-3-1 formation this afternoon for a side that has already been dumped out of the Emirates FA Cup as well, lest we forget as well. Bottom of the table, 4 points bottom as well. It's been a dreadful season thus far for the Terriers. The big news, Steve Mooney leads the line, the French striker. Alex Pritchard in behind him. Elias Kashunga will play on that wide right-hand side. Jason Punchin brought in on loan from Crystal Palace on that left-hand side. The two midfielders, Jonathan Hogg and Philip Billing. And then it's that back four, as I say. Cardiff against Huddersfield, that one off from 7 p.m.
Meanwhile, let's get back to London. Crystal Palace entertaining Watford. So let's start with the East London side. How do they look?
The big news for Palace is actually not in the starting line, but it's that Christian Benteke returns to the squad. He takes his place on the bench for the first time since a knee injury back in September, but apart from that, is an unchanged side for Roy Hodgson. The last time out 9 days ago, they beat Wolves in quite a shock result at the time, a 2-0 win there. So they line up with a 4-3-3. It's their preferred back four of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Mark my words, he'll be an international footballer by the end of this season. James Tompkins and Mamadou Sakho there at the heart of the defence, with Patrick Van Aanholt wide left. Chick Kiyote, Luka Miletovic and James MacArthur in the middle, and then Andros Townsend, he of goal of the month and probably goal of the season in December. He and Jordan Ayew and Wilf Zaha make up the front three.
I mentioned the east of London. Let's be honest, it is south-east, really, isn't it? South-east.
I didn't want to say anything.
Let's get this one right. It is south of the river and everything. Let's not try and upset too many of those east London teams. Mind you, when it comes to Watford, it's all about the northwest of London, that is.
Thank you.
Even if it is London, can we call Watford London?
Suburb.
It's sort of suburb.
For anyone that's not from London, you can describe Watford as London just to make it easier, yeah.
It's within the M25, we'll give them that.
And you can also get the London Overground all the way to Watford Junction, so I guess it technically counts.
It is Watford, and they are in action today against Crystal Palace, as we've been discussing. Similar, I guess, formation. This 4-2-2-2 formation that I seem to recall was made infamous by John Barnes at Celtic. That's a completely different conversation for another day. But Ben Foster starts in goals. It's Femina, Adrian Mariapa, Craig Cathcart and Jose Halibus across the back four. Dukari and Kapuwe will be your two all-action box-to-box midfielders. The two creators will be Roberto Pereira and Will Hughes, and then up front
You've got the movement of Gerard Deulofeu against the big man, Troy Deeney. Will captain Watford today. He will look to lead the line, and I'm looking forward to this one. I'm expecting goals. Palace against Watford.
Leicester City against Southampton. Will there be goals there? What the home team done?
Is there any way to call a Leicester City game? This is a side, of course, who in the last 3 weeks have beaten Manchester City, beaten Chelsea, beaten Everton, and lost to Newport County. it's baffling, really. So they made that last Premier League outing, a 1-0 win against Everton, which I didn't watch but have largely been led to believe was the most awful football game of the season so far. Leicester make three changes from that side. So they line up in a 4-3-3. Ricardo Pereira, Wes Morgan comes into the heart of the defence alongside Harry Maguire, Ben Chilwell on the left. And then you've got Hamza Chowdhury. Lots of people interested in this kid. A young kid through the academy has really added a bit of bite into midfield. He plays alongside Memphis Mendy and Wilfred Ndidi. That is a mean-looking midfield three. And then further forward, you've got Mark Albrighton, Jamie Vardy, and James Maddison is also back in the side.
As to Southampton, are making not that arduous a journey, is it, up to Leicester?
Not really, no. Ralf Hasenhüttl, what a job he's done since taking charge of Southampton. And it's a back three yet again, this 3-4-3 formation that keeps cropping up. Alex McCarthy starts in goal. It's a back three of Jan Bednarek, Jack Stevens and Yannick Vestergaard. Jan Valery, the young Frenchman, in at right wing back. Matt Target, the young Englishman, on the opposite flank. James Ward-Prowse gets a start alongside Romeu, and then it's that forward three. He loves movement, does a Hasenhüttl side. Nathan Redmond, Stuart Armstrong and Shane Long. That's what they give you. Bags of energy. There's a little bit of ingenuity in there as well. It is Leicester against Southampton, and that one too is off at seven.
Team news is released an hour before the game, so we won't hear Chelsea or Newcastle's team news for a little later, but we can predict, we can look into the future. I suppose starting with the home team, Matt Fortune, one man we know that will not be playing for Chelsea on this occasion is Cesc Fabregas.
Oh, Cesc Fabregas, what a wonderful player. It's not very often you'll find me tuning into the Chelsea Football Club Twitter account, but they have been rolling through some of his most awesome assists. What a wonderful, wonderful player. I cast your mind back to, and anybody who loves football will remember his assist in his first couple of games at Chelsea for Andre Schürrle up at Burnley. A beautiful little give-and-go move. It's very easy to find online at the moment. And he was just the most delicate of touches as his game developed at Chelsea. And the problem that for Fabregas was that he never really had the pace to operate in a lung-busting midfield. So he adapted his game slightly. Beautiful long passes through to Pedro, to Diego Costa. He was a very, very good player for Chelsea. And I can't help but think, having moved to Monaco earlier this week to join up with Thierry Henry for only about £10 million, that with the Jorginho kind of approach and Sarri ball looking a bit stale, that they do need a little bit more dynamism in that part of the pitch. But he will be sorely missed, I think.
Newcastle will be the opponents today. Chelsea, just have a look at the table at the moment. Chelsea obviously in fourth on 44 points, just four behind Tottenham at the moment. They will be entertaining Newcastle. Got to go down the table to find them in 15th position at the moment. They need points, don't they?
They certainly do, yeah. I watched them against Manchester United over the festive period, and they were poor. And it was Gary Neville, in actual fact, working for Sky Sports, who said it pretty much bang on the money. Newcastle, whenever you spoke about Newcastle, or whenever a visiting team went up there, there was a real positivity around the place. There was a buzz about it. Whether the team were winning or competing for trophies or not, they played a brand of football that was pleasing on the eye, and it was just a fun place. The football fans enjoyed their football. That's been sucked out of that football club and of that city at present. I know Mike Ashley will have to kick the can for that, and an awful lot of people's eyes, but Rafa Benitez as well. There's an apathy about the place. The football, and I appreciate he's a bit of a tactical genius, quote unquote, but right now, Newcastle, there's no joy there right now. And yes, okay, I expect them to go. They'll try and stifle Chelsea. They'll try and make things difficult. But I do ultimately feel Chelsea will be too strong for them this evening. Newcastle do need points, and as Newcastle fans may be listening, will also point out they need a good bit of a change and a decent bit of money to spend this January, because if they don't, then they could well get sucked into that relegation battle.
That one's live here on Dubai Eye, 3.8.
Can I just add one word on Newcastle? You're absolutely right, there's no joy there, but did you see the chant of the week out there for Newcastle this week?
I did not.
Newcastle took a whole load of fans to an under-23 games against their their arch rivals Sunderland. Now, Sunderland have been in the news recently because there's a documentary on Netflix called Sunderland Till I Die, which was started the season after they got relegated from the Premier League, and I believe
were supposed to chart their incredible automatic return to the top flight of English football. And anyone who knows about Sunderland's fortune in the last couple of years is that didn't really go according to plan. Anyway, it's a fascinating documentary. And as I say, Newcastle turned up against their under-23 team. And the chant from the crowd was, "We saw you crying on Netflix." "We saw you crying on Netflix," which I just think is absolutely brilliant. So at least for those Newcastle fans, they did find some joy in the trauma going on down the
road. And that is, you're absolutely spot on. That is a must watch as well, by the way.
Yeah, very, very
good.
It's
phenomenal. It is such an exploration.
I'll tell you what, and we don't have time to go into it too much, but I was raised in London, so I don't understand that one club city thing. You know, there's about eight clubs to choose from, top flight clubs to choose from in London. But Sunderland, it really is a brilliant, brilliant portrait on the north of England, on the struggles that happen, and that's a whole other debate, in that part of the world, and how important a football club is to a town like that. Even if you don't like football, even if you're just interested in humans, really, it's absolutely fascinating. I really urge you to go and check it out.
That's about it from us. The final word goes to you, Mark Archer, because you've done very well on a golf course and worked in your town over the last few days. Manchester United to go level with Arsenal tomorrow?
Oh, as much as I'd love to be super optimistic and on the back of momentum that they've been going, I can see them getting a result at Spurs, but probably a draw. I just don't think they're good enough. And Spurs, if they've got their A game, will be tough to knock over at Wembley. So for me, I fancy United to get a score draw. I think they've got that momentum. And that's not a bad result for them. They're really now breathing closely to 3 points behind Arsenal. And Chelsea, they can see some light to Chelsea. Now there's something to aim for. There's a target. And there wasn't the case 3 or 4 weeks ago. They now can see fourth. So Solskjaer's got them moving in the right direction. They have some momentum. The players seem refreshed. Chris McCarthy's been visiting them in Dubai. What better emphasis to go into the second half of the season now? Players are auditioning for the new manager. And it's all going forward for United. So I can see a score draw tomorrow against Spurs.
Stay tuned. You've got Brighton against Liverpool. No Alexander Arnold. He has been withdrawn last minute. He tweaked his knee, by all accounts, in the warm-up. So he has been hooked for this one. We'll get team news for you from the team from TalkSport in just a few moments' time. So stay tuned for that. Big thank you to you, Matt Fortune.
Thanks very much,
Chris
Tom.
Chris McCarthy, big
thank you very much to you, big man.
And thank you very much indeed to Tiger Woods.
Thank you very much, Tom.
We'll be back again next week live from Rusty, where the game is always on.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.